This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Rich and I have been very busy on Wednesday, October the 28th. We've been looking ahead to the US election, getting a bit of an idea about what it could mean for us here in the UAE, and a bit of investment advice as well. We've also been looking ahead to the Dubai Fitness Challenge. Kicks off this weekend. We've been speaking to the head of Dubai Tourism about what we all need to do to get in the mood. Plus, of course, Serena Kelly's got all your COVID information.
Ask Serena.
With Fragoman, dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide.
Morning, Serena.
Morning, guys.
Good to have you with us. First order of business, as ever. People are waking up. They want to know the number of cases overnight.
Okay, so this time last week, we were looking at figures of 1,077 new cases. Yesterday, they announced 1,390. This is after more than 110,800 tests were conducted across the UAE yesterday. So breaking down the overall figure of 127,624 reported cases in the UAE, that includes your recoveries of 122,458. That's because yesterday 1,708 people were announced recovered. You have two fatalities yesterday, so we're at 482. Now, when it comes to active cases, we're currently at 4,684. Now, I was going back through my notes, and August 11th, we were at 5,647 active cases. So, and the reason why I'm referring to the figures, it's just relating to details and information that was released from last night's presser.
Oh, yeah. So we had one last night.
Yes.
So what did I know you watched these things with interest. What did we learn?
Well, it was just fascinating because NSEMA, they revealed that since Wednesday last week, October 21st, till yesterday, October 27th, more than 12,000 patients recovered from COVID-19 in the UAE, which is interesting. So I know you've had a lot of, you know, a lot of messages coming into the show, people saying, you know, how are active cases so low? And again, it's just figures showing that a lot of people are recovering, and hence the figures they revealed last night.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if you heard the interview with Maurice Gravier, the Chief Investment Officer at Emirates NBD, and he was talking about this. And we asked him about what's keeping you up at night in terms of investments. Priyanka sent a message here, and he said, it's not COVID. It's uncertainty over the US election. And he said, that might surprise people. But if you look at Asia and the UAE, their fatality rate is one-tenth the rate that you're seeing, particularly in North America or the United States.
Exactly.
And that makes me think that the world has managed to, I don't want to paraphrase what Maurice said, but to live with COVID-19 and get on with life with COVID-19. And that's not trivializing it in any way, shape or form. It was just the way, Brandy, you were listening as well, that he said we can have economic life continuing in Asia, in the Middle East, in the UAE. We've shown it can be done.
And representatives from the WHO have been saying the exact same thing that you're saying as well. It's all about living with the pandemic currently. Things are going to get better, but right now it's about doing what we can with what we've got, the tools that we've got. And we keep repeating masks, physical distancing, hand sanitizing, washing your hands. But those are the current weapons that you've got right now to stop transmission, but so that we can carry on doing things. Because let's face it, they mentioned the word fatigue in the last presser at the WHO. Everyone is tired and it's emotionally draining. And, you know, mental health has been such a massive focus, especially for the UAE front. They've got toll-free numbers that you can call to speak to professionals. And it's the idea of, like, let's try and have things that, you know, you are trying to celebrate things or things to look forward to, because if you can't be positive, it's just going to get you down.
And poverty is a killer. And the interview we had with Fareed Zakaria earlier on this week, the guy from CNN who's just written a book, said if you look at a country like India, and he was born and raised in India, the shutting down the economy means 400 to 500 million daily wage earners who earn less than $2 a day are not working. And his phrase was, if they do not work, they do not eat. And child malnutrition, let alone adult malnutrition, is a very big country. And that is just one country, a very large country, admittedly, but one country where he says the need to get economic activity back on track is paramount, because poverty and the lack of economic activity is very, very dangerous.
Just going back to the fatality rates that you were talking about earlier, they mentioned that in the press briefing last night. So Dr. Omar Al-Hamadi, the spokesperson for the UAE, said there were 12 deaths in the past week, a 45% decrease. So the mortality rate is among the lowest globally at 0.4%. That's dropped from 0.5%, which we reported several months back. So, and he also went on to talk about the positivity rate. The country's positivity rate of 1% is the lowest compared to the EU, the Middle East and North Africa region. But also during the presser, they announced a new initiative, which I'm sure you've heard us talking about in the news as well. Citizens and residents, that includes yourselves and of course myself, you'll need to update your personal data through the ICA smart app or websites. That's the Federal Authority for Identity and Citizenship. So basically this is helping authorities maintain an updated digital database, helping the medical sector, which currently is very important during this climate, and just strengthening the efforts against COVID-19. So the first phase starts today. It's with UAE nationals to begin with. So UAE nationals between the ages of 18 and 60 years old, you've got a month to update your personal data. You also need to update your dependents' personal information as well. This will expand to other residents of the UAE. How do you do it? Download the app or use the website ica.gov.ae. If you've got questions, give them a call, 600 522 222.
Very quickly, drive-through testing centres in Abu Dhabi for tourists also.
Yes, so this is a new drive-through facility for COVID-19 testing. It's in the Marour area, which is located between downtown Abu Dhabi and the embassy's district, so near Al Salam Street. So it's run by the Capital Health Screening Centre, open to everyone, including tourist visa holders. So it's 180 dirhams, results sent SMS within 24 to 48 hours, but you don't need an appointment either as well. So it's open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Serena, thanks very much indeed.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, this time next week is going to be a very, very different show because we're going to be getting the results of this.
Will you shut up, man?
Listen, China ate your lunch, Joe.
You're the worst president America has ever had. Come on. I'm not here to call out his lies. Everybody knows he's a liar.
But you
I just want to make sure.
Joe, you're the liar.
I want to make sure.
Well, we think we're going to get the results. Obviously, a lot of uncertainty about whether we'll get a hard yes or no, Biden or Trump, next Wednesday.
But and whether everyone will accept what we do get.
Precisely.
Course.
But in theory, we get the results when we're on air next Wednesday morning.
Yeah, and look, early voting is mammothly up. That's extremely encouraging. We've been speaking this morning to Bernd de Busman Jr. Now, he is a Washington-based freelance journalist, and if that name's slightly familiar, it's because he was also the deputy editor of Arabian Business here in Dubai. So we've been chatting to him on the phone about the links between the US and this part of the world in light of the coming election. And one of the things we asked was, what could the election mean for both Indian Americans and Arab Americans? What are politicians doing to reach out to those groups?
A few days ago, there was a big kind of Zoom event to try to get the Indian American, or rather the South Asian American community to vote. It had a lot of, you know, big celebrities, for example, from various Netflix shows that have, you know, revolved around that community. And you know, traditionally, Indian Americans have been quite conservative, but I think this time it's much more mixed. And as far as Arab Americans go, you know, Trump hasn't said much in those regards, but Biden has. He has a platform specifically aimed at Arab Americans, and they've been campaigning hard for the Arab American vote. You know, last week, Jill Biden, his wife, was in Dearborn, Michigan, which is about 46% of Arab ancestry. And she, you know, she said very explicitly she promised them a voice in the Biden administration, and so far it's working. Today, actually, they released statistics that show that about 60% of Arab Americans plan to vote for Biden. So I think, and in a state like Michigan, you know, they might not be huge in absolute numbers, but you know, 5% could make the difference between a win or a loss in some of those states where they have a sizable population.
What about immigration, though? Because this is the other big one, isn't it? What it means for clever young people from this part of the world in terms of getting into the U.S.?
Well, actually, that's part of the platform that the Biden campaign released about Arab Americans. I mean, he specifically said he wanted to welcome more people from the Middle East. You know, that could be anything from students to even refugees. He promised to up the cap on refugees. But I think, you know, a lot of Arab American families I've spoken to are quite hopeful that under a Biden administration, things would be easier in terms of immigration to the states. You know, at the moment, there's been a lot of delays in terms of immigration paperwork. And I think, you know, the Biden campaign is at least saying that they want to address those issues specifically for the Middle East.
It's Bernd de Boosman Jr. speaking to us this morning from Washington.
Joining us on the line now is someone who's going to tell us what it means for you, in particular, your money and your investments. He is the Chief Investment Officer at the biggest bank in Dubai, Emirates NBD, Maurice Gravier. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Richard.
So in simple terms, we'll get to different asset classes in a second, but in simple terms, in your experience, what impact, if any, does a US presidential election have on financial markets and investments?
I think that we shouldn't speak about the general impact because we really live unprecedented times. I think for this one, the key thing is to know whether we will know who has won on election night, which is not a given, and the worst scenario is certainly contested results, then we will have an immediate effect. And I must say that for Biden, it's more of a global relief because of a bigger fiscal stimulus package and more growth and less aggressivity on foreign policy. And for Trump, it's better just for U.S. assets, you know, which is America first agenda. But then over the medium term, I don't think it makes a huge difference whoever wins. We are recovering from the COVID-19 crisis. The Fed is printing money and this won't change that much.
One of the stories that we're covering on a daily basis, Brandy mentions it in her commodity reports, I mention it in the stock market reports, is the stimulus package in the United States. We haven't had one yet. It has become politicized. Whatever happens on Tuesday, Wednesday, does that affect the stimulus plan and should we care?
Oh, it definitely affects the stimulus plan. Well, you're right. This stimulus plan has been really held hostage by the U.S. election, and it's really a shame because that's what is needed now to kind of sustain the recovery, which has started, by the way. Then it's just a matter of when we will know who is in charge, because both parts agree that we need a stimulus part. It's just that they prefer to blame the other for doing nothing in election time rather than sitting at the table. And again, the worst case scenario is contested result because it would postpone this fiscal stimulus for probably 1 month. Then, again, regardless of Biden or Trump, there will be a fiscal stimulus package. If it's a split Congress, there will be some battles because of course, the two proposals are quite different. But whatever happens, we'll get one. A smaller one with the Republicans and more driven towards pure U.S., less renewable, you know, this kind of thing. A bigger one for Biden and we'll get one.
Okay, so we'll get a stimulus plan probably by the time we're carving our Christmas turkeys on December the 25th.
Yes.
Fine. That's good to know. Maybe not quite by Thanksgiving, though. So in terms of how we set ourselves up as investors, Brandy yesterday morning bought the dips. Very bold, Brandy. How's that working out for you?
I'm doing okay this morning. I'm up ever so slightly on what I bought. Thank you for asking.
But Brandy just bought a global tracker fund. As we position ourselves, Maurice, and your clients at Emirates NBD, in the private bank and wealth management, these are guys with A, money, and B, experience. How should they be positioning themselves as we enter the race?
First, we don't take any short-term bets because really during an election, everything can happen and we will have some volatility in the short term. In the medium term, and when I say medium term, it's probably, you know, 2021 or 6 to 18 months. Frankly, the backdrop is not adverse for investment because we will have recovery boosted by fiscal and monetary stimulus, which means growth. And we will have ultra low interest rates, even if they spike a bit with Biden, which justifies high valuations. So buying equity is a good thing. We are slightly overweight equities now. We think the medium-term outlook is too good to be underweight equities. However, the short-term volatility is too big to be massively overweight now. So that's why we also sold some cash to seize the opportunities. And if anything, if we see a big drawdown because of contested results, it should be an opportunity to add.
So when you say you're overweight global equities, Brandy literally bought the MSCI Global Index, a massively diversified portfolio. Do you segment it a little bit more, either by region, North America, Europe, Asia, Africa, whatever it may be, or indeed by sector, liking tech, not liking commodity producers, for example? How do you break down your overweight equities position?
Well, that's a great question. We have a very clear answer, and you won't be surprised because we like that for ages. Emerging market stocks are our clear preference because, they are cheaper. The fundamentals are better. Even in the medium term, there is no recession in China, not at all. And for the long term, they have these secular growth drivers. And on top of that, again, their valuation is more reasonable. So we like emerging markets, Asia in particular, and China in particular. Then the second one is the U.S. because it's the pool for stock selection. And rather than speaking about sectors, because frankly, we like technology, but it's, of course, it's hot now. We like healthcare and these kind of secularly defensive sectors, but they are hot now. And when we'll have the fiscal stimulus, we will see some rotation towards cyclical sectors. So we don't take big sector bets, but we think that stock selection and emerging markets within stocks are the two winning components for the years to come.
Couple of final questions, Maurice. The US dollar, the dirham is pegged to it. It's a big deal here, particularly the hoteliers and retailers listening who rely on people coming in from overseas to spend money. The strength or weakness of the dollar is a huge deal for them. Where do you see the greenback going in the next 12 months?
In the next 12 months, I think we should continue to see a weakening US dollar, but it depends again what, you know, that's really all the major developed countries, in Europe, in the US, in Japan, they are printing money in proportions that have never been seen before. So as a group, emerging market currencies should be a bit stronger. Now, talking about the US dollar compared to the euro, we keep on thinking that it should weaken a bit, not massively, because again, they are all engaged in quantitative easing. But US dollar compared to emerging market currency, we think it should be lower in higher proportions.
A final question. If our resident gold bug and gold expert, Jeff Rhodes, were here, he would say, well, if everyone's printing money, Maurice, you've got to buy gold because that's a hedge against inflation. If the printing presses are on, you've got to buy gold. What's your house view on Brandy's looking at me with that? She's giving me the look, Maurice. But in terms of gold, what's your position?
That's very simple. It's our largest overweight currency. So it's not a huge part of our strategic asset allocation, but you advise to, in a moderate profile, to have 5% in gold. The reason, I agree, it's the currency you cannot print. That's, you know, as simple as that. And the fact that it yields nothing, it's not an issue. At some time, years down the road, we'll also look at cryptocurrencies probably as a store of value because developed market bonds, they are not the risk-free return anymore. They are probably a return-free risk now. So if you want risk mitigation, go in cash and gold. If you want yield, go in corporate and emerging markets. So yes, I agree. Gold is good.
Very quickly, Priyanka's written in. Ask Maurice, in terms of investing, what keeps him awake at night at the moment?
In the short term, it's of course the contested results in the US. It's not the virus, and I may surprise you, but you remember we talked about that even in February or March. I was absolutely wrong on the virus initially. I thought it was nothing, but now we really think that we have learned to live with the virus and the fact that the death as a percentage of population, the fact that it is 10 times better in the UAE than in UK, for example, and it's the same for Asia, it proves that we can live with the virus. So it's the contested election results now that keep us up at night. Sorry.
Lovely. Well, maybe we'll talk to you Wednesday or Thursday morning once. Inshallah, we know the results of that. But for now, Maurice Gravier, Chief Investment Officer of Emirates NBD. Really appreciate your insights this morning. Gold, his big overweight position, not something you and I really spend money on.
No, but I am going to steal his phrase. It's the currency you cannot print.
Thank you very much.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Indeed it is. Public holiday tomorrow and we all wish we were going on holiday.
I do.
But we're not.
No, we're not. We're here.
I'm currently booking hotels on the creek.
Are you? Because you said you could. This is the long staycation. Rich is taking the wife away for the weekend, leaving the children to forage for food themselves amongst the dark streets of Al-Barsha. Mm. Did you find a hotel, though? Because you said that pretty much anything that would be a treat was booked.
Pretty much, yeah. The posh one in the desert in Ras Al Khaimah, booked. The posh one in the desert in Abu Dhabi, booked. the posh world on the desert island that's a bit like, or the island that's a bit like the Maldives and Abu Dhabi booked, I could go on. Which is a good sign for the hotel industry. So we're going to Deira instead.
Goodness gracious me. Right. I'm having a look, speaking of holidays, at three reports that we have had come out from the aviation industry, from the hotel industry as well. Here's the first one from IATA that's come out during the show this morning. They've come out with new numbers, basically. For 2021, so next year, they expect the drop in revenue compared to 2019, the last sort of proper year that we had, if you like, of aviation, to be much deeper. They were expecting to see a 29% drop in revenues. They're now expecting to see a 46% drop in revenues.
Is for 2020.
This is next year.
Oh, no.
So they're expecting it to be roughly half of what we'd seen in 2019. They're putting that down to new COVID outbreaks, as well as quarantine measures and government restrictions. They're not a fan of quarantine measures. They're saying that the fourth quarter of this year will be, and I quote, extremely difficult. They say there is little indication that the first half of next year will be any better or significantly better. And they say that basically the industry can't sustain it. They say the aviation industry cannot slash costs sufficiently to neutralise the severe cash burn to avoid bankruptcies and preserve jobs next year. So they're basically saying that airlines just can't get lean enough to keep jobs and to stop themselves from going under, forget this year, next year.
Well, they'll need bailouts, won't they? And I guess that means whoever gives the bailout, whether it's a government, a private equity firm, a sovereign wealth fund, whoever it may be, a rights issue to shareholders, will end up owning more of the company because that cash is going to be in exchange largely for equity, as you would have thought.
The only bright spot, they say, is the fuel price. Fuel price is also down around 42% on last year. Add to this the Airports Council International Europe, which is the body that represents airports and operators in the EU and now the UK. They say that we could see almost 200 airports going bust within months. That's their warning. And bear in mind, it is a warning, so it is dramatic. But they've done the sums. They say there are 740 commercial airports in Europe at the moment. And there are a lot of very small airports across Europe, of course. They say that 193 of them could face insolvency if passenger traffic doesn't start to recover by the end of the year. And IATA has basically just come out and said, yeah, it won't.
Now, airlines are seen as strategic, and major hub airports are strategic. Maybe even secondary airports are strategic. But the little ones, little provincial airports, is anyone going to bail them out? Any white knights charging over the hill on a trusty steed? I'm not sure.
And then we look at hotels. New report out from Hotstats. They basically say,
is this any better?
Yeah, do you know what it slightly is, if you're here? The US, they say, just stuck. Stuck in neutral. The rest of the world, it is slightly easier. I'm going to go straight and have a look at where we are now, where they say the Middle East shows, and I quote, composure. Hotels in the Middle East came back to some sort of positivity, so it was in the green rather than in the red, or in the black rather than in the red for August. They say they're still there in September, but not by much. So they are seeing RevPAR fall back a little bit from the month before, which fell back a little bit from the month before, but we are still up just over. Labour costs, by the way, currently making up 50% of total revenue at hotels in the Middle East.
Okay. So the hotel situation is not quite as bad as aviation, but it's certainly not great.
No. And we know that staycations, local travel is taking up quite a lot of that.
But it is predominantly the resort hotels and the beach hotels. They're doing really, really well, and that's fine. But your three-star in Barsha, that's a
your
challenge.
Business Hilton.
Precisely.
No offence to Hilton.
Other
business hotels are available.
Thank you very much indeed. We're talking deals on the Business Breakfast. One deal that we thought was dead might now be happening. But they are.
Well, maybe. I'm looking at the Financial Times, and it's reporting, like many other business publications this morning, that LVMH and Tiffany are having makeup talks.
CNBC reported this one as well, the US TV network. This is how they broke the news.
What I can tell you is there's at least what I'm hearing, indirect conversations. Now, the judge here, by the way, has been encouraging both sides to try to do something. When we say indirect conversations, you know, the old back channel, you don't want to have the principals talking to each other. But there are ways to try to communicate at least and see if there is something that can be done. What would that be? Well, maybe you slightly reduce the price.
Sounds a little bit like my mate fancies you.
Yeah. But you're just checking out the water because no one wants to make a fool of themselves unnecessarily. I mean, there's been some really, and again, like all relationship breakdowns, there's been some really harsh words that have been said, particularly from the LVMH side. They have filed, how many pages was it?
So the deal was agreed last year, wasn't it, in happier times. $16 billion, LVMH, the French company, was going to buy Tiffany, happy days. They both agreed to it. Then COVID hit, everything changed, and a few months ago, LVMH pulled out. They cited regulatory concerns, but not many people were really convinced it was a regulatory issue. So LVMH pulled out, but Tiffany said, no. We want our $16 billion. LVMH said some cutting things.
Catastrophic, dismal in your prospects. Yeah. It wasn't you look good in that dress, was it?
You look good on the dance floor. Anything, but can they bring it back together? Well, The word on the street is that maybe they can.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast,
where it's time to burn those COVID kilos. Let's get physical, I wanna get physical. Let's get into physical. Let me hear your body talk. Your body talk. Let me hear your body talk. Let's get physical. And that is because the Dubai Fitness Challenge is back, and joining us on the line with the details is the Chief Executive Officer of Dubai Corporation for Tourism and Commerce Marketing and a friend of the Business Breakfast, Isam Kazim. Morning, Isam.
Good morning, Richard.
Good to have you with us. So, Dubai Fitness Challenge is back. Give us the details.
Well, again, this is its fourth edition, so I think people are getting more and more familiar with the event. We're just as excited as every year. The key thing, of course, as always, is to get people up and about doing exercises, whatever it may be, whatever your skill levels may be, or even your endurance levels may be. The important thing is that everyone can do something active continuously, regularly for 30 minutes every day for 30 days.
Okay, so His Highness Sheikh Hamdan has been pushing this one from the start, and he's pushing it again this year. And I get if you're Sheikh Hamdan, who's clearly an all-action guy and really fit and does all these endurance sports, that's fine. What about if we're not quite at that level, Isam? What can we do?
I think, to be honest with you, from day one, the initiative that was launched by His Highness Sheikh Hamdan was clearly to make Dubai the most active city and a fit city and a healthy city. We've always talked about child obesity or child diabetes and so on and so forth. And I think it's very important for individuals to take it upon themselves and family members to encourage one another to really lead a healthy lifestyle. And the idea, again, is very, very simple. Anybody who is not active, a simple walk 30 minutes a day every day can help. Those who are actually very active, which is right at the other end of the spectrum, can take this as an opportunity to encourage their friends, their relatives, their colleagues to join them in workout sessions and maybe do something very different for 30 days. So the gym buffs can actually take on yoga. The ones who run and do endurance can do weights. So the idea is that it needs to be something exciting that really encourages the community to work together to become active and be healthy. And from our side, what we've done as every year is try to introduce new fitness villages around town. For example, this year we have a DP World Fitness Village at Kite Beach. We have an Emirates NBD Fitness Village in Al Khawanij, and we have a My Dubai Fitness Village in Festival City Mall. So again, if we're trying our best to get the community together, all the ones who are within the health circle, to really play a role and play a part in getting the city active. And what's more important, just to add to that, is this year we understand that there is the health and safety and hygiene side. So of course we're encouraging people to follow the best practices when it comes to wearing masks or maintaining social distancing while practicing. But at the same time, we've also introduced this year several apps that will be offered for free for 30 days for people who are participating and joining and want to do something that kind of guides them through the process.
Okay, well, let's talk about how you're doing this in a time of COVID. Because Brandy and I, earlier on, about an hour ago, were reminiscing about some of our favourite memories from the Dubai Fitness Challenge. I remember, Issam, with you about 3 or 4 years ago in the studio doing press-ups live on camera, which was a scary thought, but quite good fun. Brandy was reminiscing about what last year?
Ah, the Joe Wicks massive outdoor workout.
Yes. Yes.
And these were all brilliant things, but of course, we've got to be socially distanced. And I know you guys have been looking into this in a lot of detail over the past 3 or 4 weeks or 3 or 4 months. What were the big challenges you identified to get the fitness challenge up and running in a time of COVID? And how did you solve that problem?
I think, the things that you guys mentioned, as well as let's not forget the run, which was a huge, huge event for us. We had over 70,000 participants taking part of in this Sheikh Zayed running track. So that was, of course, something that was iconic for us. But for this year, what we've done is we wanted to make sure that people are maintaining the safe distance. Now, for us, what's been quite positive in Dubai is that the minute the lockdown happened, the entire city, as one community, took it upon themselves and felt the responsibility and the ownership and made sure that they are following all the regulations that are in place. And that is something that we were very, very proud of. So this year, what we've done is with the apps, we're making it easier for people to be able to work out in the privacy of their own home, in the comfort of their own homes. And at the same time, what we've started to do is we started to look at creating cycling and running tours of Dubai, where people, again, can maintain the distances while enjoying the camaraderie of the exercise. But at the same time, you can also follow these tours virtually and do it on your own. So the important thing is to accommodate. I don't want to give anyone the excuse to say that, well, we can't go outdoors now because of COVID. No, there are ways to be smart about it, but still maintain a very healthy lifestyle altogether.
Because a number of us have put on, Issam, if we're being honest, a few COVID kilos. If we want to use this as an excuse to try and get rid of them, give us the basic details. When does it start? And what's the call to action? What's the thing that people should do to use your phrase, take the challenge?
See, this year, the challenge starts from October 30th and goes on all the way through to the 28th of November. So again, maintaining the number of days that we want people to commit to this. And when it comes to the exercise side of it, I think honestly, it's very, very important for people, if they can go outdoors, the weather is amazing now, to find that space within their own garden or within the public spaces that there are. The government has spent so much money in creating running tracks, cycling tracks, and all of these different areas within Dubai, beautiful areas of Dubai, that you can really go out and enjoy the weather and do 30 minutes of physical activity, whether it's jogging, whether it's cycling, or whether it's even doing a series of body weight exercises. It's squats, burpees, push-ups, whatever they can do that can be consistent and constant for 30 minutes, something that they can gradually build themselves into, because again, it gives you 30 days, because it's every day, you want to make sure that you're taking it easy on the joints, you're taking it easy on your endurance, so you don't turn yourself off the program, but you actually get excited and interested and see the difference, physical difference, that keeps on giving you that encouragement, that boost to continue and keep on going.
I can see only one flaw in your argument. It starts on the 30th, so Friday, not a problem. We'll all do our 30 minutes. 31st is Halloween, Issam. It's trick-or-treating. It's pumpkin spice lattes. It's pumpkin muffins in all the coffee shops. How do we get over this? What's the nutrition aspect of this? How do we resist all those goodies?
I think the best part of that is the fact that it gives you the short boost of carbs, so you might as well try to use that energy immediately after and try to do something, even if it's running in the spot, but doing something active. And I think you're absolutely right, because people tend to forget that 70% of healthy living comes from the diet itself. So I think that is also something that people need to understand. The 30 days, the science behind the 30 days is that studies show that anything above 21 or 22 days of being done consistently creates a habit. So if that is the case, then people need to make sure that they're drinking a lot more water, they're eating healthier, they're being much smarter in the choices that they're making when it comes to what goes into their body, and at the same time, using this as an opportunity to work out consistently for those 30 days.
Okay, can't let you go without asking you to answer your own question. I follow you on social media, and I know you take your fitness very, very seriously. On your website, it says, find your 30. And there's indoor cycling, there's five ladies-only fitness clubs, there's kettlebell workouts, which I know Brandy Scott's a big fan of. In 30 seconds, Issam, what is your 30 by 30?
My 30 is definitely focusing a lot on the weights aspect because, again, for my body, I feel that weightlifting and doing exercises of that nature actually has the biggest impact on me physically, personally.
Good luck with that. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. The 30 by 30 Fitness Challenge kicks off this weekend. It kicks off on the 30th of October. And if you want the details, you can go to, of course, DubaiFitnessChallenge.com. But just Google it and you'll find all the stuff. Brandy Scott, 10 seconds. What are you planning on doing? Dumbbells, kettlebells or walking?
I'm going to get back into circuit training, which I've let slide over the last few weeks.
We're looking forward to that.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.